All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away, but we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard, fighting non-violently.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, thanks, and welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting out of the city of Chicago in the state of Illinois. Thank you. And I want to apologize. Once again, I was off the air yesterday, and I want to apologize to any guest who was waiting to be a part of the show. Things happen. All right. We're on the air today. We're live. We're live. L-I-V-E. Live. Based on the north side of the city near the lake. And folks, once again, it's a dull, dreary day. The sun has peaked out, but that's all it's done was just peak. It went back in. Just went back in. And I'm still under the weather, sort of, kind of. So bear with me as I try to get through this. All righty. It's a blessing to be alive. It's a blessing to be here. It's a blessing to know that you're out there. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. My guest, who is booked today, is author Vicki Jones. And we're going to have a lot of commentary. But first of all, I want to mention Don Rickles. The comedian Don Rickles passed away today at the age of 90. Wow, a lot of people dying. But one of the things is that some of the people who are dying, they are in their 90s, which is a good thing, because I always felt if you can get to your 90s, live your life through your 90s and somehow pass away during your 90s, I think you've lived somewhat of a full life. You've lived some, it's great. It's great. My grandmother, from my understanding, died. She was 97. I didn't feel too sorry for her because she lived a full life. She lived a great life. But it doesn't matter how old a person is, especially a loved one, whether they're in their 80s, 90s, or 40s. When someone dies, it's always traumatic, no matter what age they are. But if you reach your middle 80s, your 90s, your early 90s, middle 90s, you've lived, in my estimation, you've lived a great life. You've lived a long life. And you've been around. You know a lot. You can teach. You can show. You can tell. You can understand. People will ask you questions, you know. What is the secret to your longevity and all that kind of thing? So I figure that when you're dying, when you're in your 90s and you pass away, you've lived a long time. There are so many stories there. And Don Rickles, the latest to die, comedian. I mean, he was funny. I watched him when I was younger at some point. He was funny. I mean, he delved out a lot of insults, though. He was an insult-filled guy. I mean, he would insult you, but, you know, he would later kind of soften it up a little bit, and it just was his way. He was a comedian. I mean, this is how he earned his living, insulting people. Don Rickles, from my understand, he was 90 years old, but first he started out he trained as a dramatic actor. Yeah, he was trained as an actor. He did a lot of acting in the 50s and early 60s, and I guess that wasn't his calling. So he found out some kind of way that he was a comedian. He could make people laugh, and he went from there. Wow, that's, you know what, you always learn something, no matter how old you are, no matter what you think you know about other people, you always learn something. And it seems like, you know, you don't learn much about someone until after they're dead. That's awful, but a lot of times you don't learn too much about people that you know until they're gone. They're not here anymore. But at the age of 90, and earlier this week, April 2017, earlier this week, Doris Day, one of my favorite actors, Doris Day, she had a birthday. And she, like the rest of us, she found out that she was actually 95 years old. She was shocked and amazed, but she accepted it, you know, because they somehow came up with her original birth certificate. And I'm pretty sure they showed her. And she said, wow. One of the things I loved about Doris Day, and I still do, and I still watch her movies. Matter of fact, I got a few here. And she was such a perky actress. She was interesting. She was perky. She was funny. I think that's what led to her fame. In every one of her movies, she was perky, especially Calamity Jane. I mean, she was bouncy. And very talented. And I read somewhere that she actually started out as a band singer. Yeah. And then that paved the way for her to become an actor. And she succeeded at it. Her movies were interesting. They were funny. They were well written, well acted. And through the 50s and 60s, I think her first movie was in 1948, Romance on the High Seas or something. And she was, like I said, I still watch her movies because they are positive. They are entertainment. But she's 95, and she herself found that out. Because before she knew she was 95 years old, she thought maybe she was somewhere between 92 and 93. But she's actually 95, 5 years away from being 100 years old. Now, when you get 95, between 95 and 100, as my grandmother did, you've lived, in my estimation, you've lived a long, long life. You know, so, and now we're all wondering when we're going to get that news, when that news is going to come along, when Doris Day has passed away. It's coming. We're all going to die. Nobody's going to live forever. But when you live to be 95, 100 years old, Bob Hope was 100. We just recently, had Chuck Berry pass away. He was 90. And you think about it, B.B. King, he was 89 years old, 89 to 90 years old, B.B. King. So he passed away. You lived a long ass time. You lived. I'm not saying you should die because you're in your 90s. No, you've got some people who live way past 100. So, you know, but still in all, you have, and think about it, some of these people who live way past 100, they still have their mindset way past 100 and never even heard of dementia or Alzheimer's. Their brains were just as bright and snappy as they were when they were younger. So, you know, when you're living into your 90s, that's great. That's wonderful. You lived a long time, you know, and especially if you can reach your 90s without being suffering and in a lot of pain and, you know, suffering from a lot of diseases and stuff like that. I mean, it's amazing and it's wonderful. So Don Rickles, I can't feel too sorry for him. I mean, if you want to see Don Rickles, you want to see Chuck Berry or B.B. King, a lot of these people who have passed away. There's plenty of material out there that you can find on them. I mean, they've left a lot behind. They've left so much behind. Videos, movies, recordings, something creative. They have left something behind. And that's what I try to tell people. If you're going to live, make sure you do something that's memorable. So when you pass away, there's something that you left behind that people can go and look at, read, or observe or something, leave something behind beside 10 or 20 children. Leave something behind. Let people know 10 years after you've been dead for 10, 20, 30 years, do something positive right now to let people know that you've been here, that you have contributed to the betterment of society, even though you've passed away. And I think Don Rickles has done that. I think B.B. King has done that. I think a lot of the people, I think James Brown has done it. I think Sam Cooke has done it. They've all left something here, even though they've been gone a long time. I mean, if you want to hear something by Sam Cooke, you know, I mean, his music is out there. You know, if Picasso, for instance, Leonardo da Vinci, these painters, they're gone. They've been gone for centuries, you know, but their paintings and their works are still here. Edgar Allan Poe, one of the most beloved authors on the face of this earth, Edgar Allan Poe, he's been gone for a long time, over 100 years, but yet we still read his material. We still go after and devour his work because he left us a lot. He left us a lot of his writings, his work. So we'll always remember him. And that's basically what I'm saying. We're all going to die, but try to make sure that you leave something behind that the rest of us can go back and relate to and say, hey, wow, this is phenomenal. This is a gifted person. This person left this for us. And people can learn from what you've done. You know, I mean, it's, for example, there's a lot of great, good looking people out here. It's a ton of great looking, beautiful people out here. And I'm talking, when I say beautiful and when I say great looking, I'm talking about features, beautiful people, great, gorgeous looking people. And I want to tell some of those people who think they're great and gorgeous and beautiful. Yeah, you are. You are beautiful. You are handsome. You are a delight. But you have to remember, your good looks are going to fade. You're not going to be beautiful forever. You're not going to be that handsome young man walking down the street forever. You're going to get older. Your looks are going to fade. And I tell people, stop acting uppity or treating other people in an unfair way because you feel that they do not look as good as you do, because your looks are going to fade. Nobody's going to stay young forever. Nobody's going to stay good looking forever, especially if you don't, you know, take care of it. This is why I say, if you're young, you're beautiful, you're handsome, do something with yourself. Do something positive with yourself. Do something. If you can use your good looks to help other people, then do it. Then do it. Don't use your good looks to be selfish. Oh, I look good, they look bad. You know, leave something behind. I mean, because your good looks, they are not going to last. They're going to go. As you're going to look around and you are not as good looking as you used to be when you were younger. And other people are going to start looking at you differently because you've lost your looks. You may have lost your looks, but you have been creative all along the way. And I don't see why people are so hung up on looks, but they are. They are. I don't see it. Personally, I think that being talented and creative and putting something out there for the world to see and for the world to utilize and devour, that to me is more than being good looking, because there's a lot of good looking people out here, great looking people who don't know where they're going, who don't even know, they don't even have a clue. So it's not about so much as being good looking. It's about being creative, being talented, and being able to leave something behind once you leave this earth. That's what it's all about.
But I know a lot of people are hung up on their looks. You know, I mean, they have to come out here and show it off. But my thing is that leave something behind. I mean, because so many people leave this earth every day. The only reason why we hear about celebrities is because they're famous. But you got people dying every day, all the time, every second, every minute. A lot of these people will be, have been, and will be forgotten. Totally forgotten. And it's a shame that you've been on this earth for so long to be forgotten. Some people are alive and forgotten. Nobody thinks about them. Nobody visit them. They don't have family. They don't have friends. And so you really got to leave something behind. Leave something to let us know that you were here. You know, a lot of writers, there's a lot of good writers out there and a lot of great published material that's on that's out here on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, you name it. There's a lot of great books out here, beautiful books. That's one way of leaving something behind when you leave this earth. You know, leave something where somebody can say, hey, wow, George Wilder did this. George Wilder Jr. did that. He did this. He did that. But he dead now. But look at this. You know, you want to leave somebody something. You want to leave. I mean, in some cases, you can leave a lot of people have kids. They leave their kids. I mean, but that's irrelevant to me. I mean, you're going to have an offspring, but you want to leave because your offspring is going to want to leave something behind when they're gone also, and their children and their children's children. So what we want to do is leave something behind, you know, do something, make the world a better place. All right. We had this attack in Syria and Donald Trump is thinking about military options. I don't know if that's going to go anywhere. I think Donald Trump is a lot of talk. I actually think he doesn't. He's a coward. He's afraid. I'm pretty sure he's talking to his generals because he doesn't know. He likes you to think that he does. All right. We were talking about, if I can go back, we were talking about Don Rickles, the comedian. He passed away 90 years old. And Chuck Berry passed away 90 years old. Yeah. I mean, when you reach 90, you feel that. And one of the things that's really, really telling is that these people, when they passed away in their 90s, they were still doing what they loved doing. I mean, they died doing what they were doing. They weren't retired. They were still working. Chuck Berry was in his 90s, and he was still doing concerts in his 90s. B.B. King, 89, 90, he was still doing concerts in his 90s. Bob Hope, 100 years old, and he was still doing what he does or did. They never stopped working. I mean, I remember one of my favorite authors was Robert B. Parker, the guy who penned the Spencer novels, the Jesse Stone novels. I mean, he did a lot of them. I mean, he was one of my favorite. I got some books here by him now in my studio here. He was one of the greatest suspense writers ever, you know. And he died. He was 77 years old when he passed away. I'm not saying that just because he wasn't 90 that this was too soon for him to pass away. I'm just saying that I'm mentioning him because people die doing what they love, and he died doing what he loved. He died doing what he loved, and that was writing, that was creating. So he left a lot behind. So though Robert B. Parker is gone, his many books, his creativity is still here. Marilyn Monroe is gone, but her creativity is still here. Yeah, James Brown is gone, but his creativity lives among us today. What I'm saying is, do something positive with your life so when you pass away, and we are going to die, you can leave something behind for the next generation and the next generation to say that, hey, wow, you were here. You were here. And one of the things I want to say about Robert B. Parker is that he died, as I've mentioned, he died doing what he loved, writing. The guy was at his laptop writing when he killed over onto the computer and died. I mean, his fingers were on the keyboard when he killed over and died, according to reports of his death. He just, bing, he just fell down on top of the computer with his fingers right there and passed away, you know? So, but as I've just mentioned, his work is still here. You can read him every single day of your life. You can download him on your Kindle. Robert B. Parker, you know, and the Spencer and the Jesse Stones novels that he has written. I used to look at his work. I'm going to tell you something, folks. I used to open up his book and I said, wow, this guy writes like he's in fourth grade. But as you as you move on into the book, you can see where it gets more challenging. So those were great, great books. And blessings to author Robert B. Parker, who passed away a few years ago, killed over onto his computer as he was writing, and he passed away. You know? So yeah, if I pass away, if George Wilder Jr. passed away, I think I'm gonna be like a lot of the rest of people, pass away doing what I love doing, and that is writing, doing the radio show, hosting the radio show, booking people, signing up people for the show, it's fun. It's great. It gives me a sense of being a leader, you know, because I'm booking, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm producing this show, I'm writing the show, I'm doing the books and stories and all this kind of thing, and helping other people and all this kind of thing, reviewing books and all that kind of thing. So it's fun, among other things, you know. So when you're a parent, married or single, you're going to have to wear many, many hats if you're creative. That's what it's all about. And being talented and creative means that you are talented and creative more than one thing. Just because you are a talented writer, that doesn't mean that you can't be a talented musician or dancer or philanthropist or whatever you want to be. You know, all right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm just ranting, folks. I'm just ranting. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. My guest is Vicky Jones. So we're going to see what that is about. Okay, we're going to take a little bit of a break right here, people, and we will be right back. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. That was a little bit of a musical break, folks. All right, Illinois Senate okays tougher gun sentences for repeat gun offenders. I think that's a great thing, folks. I don't know how much that's going to lower crime in the city of Chicago, but I think maybe that's one step towards it. But that's the Senate, and now it has to go to the House, and this Republican governor is going to have to sign it. And but still in all, I don't know if that's going to lower crime. That's great, you know, but the thugs going to be the thugs. The dirt bags are going to be the dirt bags. And you know, I don't know. We'll see how that goes. But Chicago is a bedrock of shootings. There's no doubt about that. Crime in general. Period. You know, and I can't say that because I'm on the north side of the city that nothing ever happens over here. That would be stretching it because, you know, I mean, you hear about crime on television a lot, on the news a lot, but there's also crime of the same nature that's taking place out in the streets every day, and you don't hear about it on the news. If somebody is walking up and down the street, get their wallet taken, you know, you're not going to hear about that on the news. Even if the victim reports his crime, it may not be big enough to be put on the news. I guess what I'm saying is what you hear on the news is just a small percentage of what actually goes on in the city of Chicago. You know, I mean, if you hear something really, really bad, it's probably going to be a shooting or something. Like these seven people were shot the other day and there was four more shot, and the weekend's coming up and the weather's getting nice. Uh-oh, the weather's getting nice. And when the weather gets nice, the idiots come out and they start shooting and killing and maiming and sexually assaulting. And the police has to get on top of this. I mean, they get paid a pretty good money. That's something, a pretty good salary. And I feel that if you are afraid to in the city of Chicago or anywhere, if you're afraid to walk outside of your house because of being shot, then obviously these guys aren't doing their jobs. They're not serving and protecting. They're just making excuses to try to cover their own asses. And things have to change. That they have to change. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm all over the place. And LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter. Yeah. I'm just a social media phenomenon. Boy, I wish. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Let's do this again. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away. But we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard, fighting non-violently. All right, it's very windy in the city of Chicago. The wind is blowing all over the place, raining. Well, yesterday was raining, wind blowing, gust. It was cold. You would never think it was April. Not in this city. It was a mess. And it's not that much better today. It's just that it's not raining. And they're calling for, by this weekend, I think they're calling for 65 to 71 degrees. Well, that will have to wait to be seen. And like I said, I'm still nursing a cold and trying to get over the flu. That's one of the reasons why the show wasn't on yesterday. And so on and so forth. All right, Vicki Jones is my guest today, making the world a better place one show at a time. That's all that the show is about, making the world a better place. At least that sounds good, doesn't it? It sounds good, right? That's why I use it, making the world a better place. In everyone's life, there are pages that are simply must read. Yeah, I agree. I think every individual out here on the face of this earth, they can tell their own individual story. So in some cases, we're all writers, whether we put it down on paper or publish it or not, because everybody has a story to tell. I mean, and it's very interesting. I mean, you don't have to be a big old movie star or a famous person to tell your story. If your story is riveting and you think it should be told, because I've heard a lot of wonderful stories on this show. Authors come on this show and they tell some of the greatest stories. And, you know, I'm just in awe of all of this stuff. And they have, you know, and I always tell people go buy their books, because I think their books would probably more likely help you in whatever situation you find yourself in, especially if that situation is similar to what has just been said. So I've had a number of authors on this show. I don't know, 300 or 400 people have been on this show. And that's not, you know, adding all the people who have asked to be on the show who somehow couldn't make it or scheduling conflicts or they forgot that they were supposed to be on the show. But basically, I've had a lot of people on the show and they've been telling some riveting stories on this show. Sometimes I can go back and just listen to a podcast that I've done 2 or 3 years ago and listen to how riveting the stories were then as they are now. And like I said, folks, I learned just like you learned. I mean, because one of the things, we never stop learning. We never stop learning. If you stop learning, you're dead. I don't know, 100. You never stop learning. Things are changing all the time, every day. You know, but there's no sense in trying to put someone down because they didn't know this or they didn't know that. You know, that's not right. I mean, you learn something all the time. You learn and then you go on, you know, and I learn all the time. And I welcome it. You know, I welcome that. There's people who listen to me and they learn stuff. I listen to them. I learn stuff. You listen to us all and you learn a lot of things that you thought you knew or that you should have known that you actually now know. So I've had a good run on the show. And I all those people that have appeared on the show, some have appeared on the show twice, and they all have their stories. And that's why I'm saying everybody, every individual out here on the face of this earth, they have a story, their own individual stories, even if it's a story about delivering pizzas. It's a story about growing up, friends and family. You know, everybody has a story, you know, an autobiography or a memoir in them. You know, everybody has that, whether you put that down on paper or not, whether you write about it or not, whether you let people know of it or not, you have a story, you know, so you know, tell it, tell your story, let everybody know what's been going on with you, you know. Because you never know, your story could, you know, your story just might mirror a lot of other people's and their stories. You know, your story might be exact as the next person's story, and you guys might have something in common. So, you know, but I've known too many people who didn't want to talk about their books, didn't want to promote their books, did not want to even show their books, but they're writers and they're public writers. I didn't know. I never understood that. My thinking was, if you got a book, you got it out there, you want to tell people about it. But you got some authors that are afraid to do that. Yeah, I don't want to go on the radio. I don't want to go on TV. I'm not talking about my book. but then why in the hell are you writing it? You know, so you, but everybody has a story. Everybody has a story. I mean, I've heard of people who write every day and then take what they write, stuff it down in the bottom of the drawer. I mean, why write if you're going to do that? You know, if you're going to write, you want people to read what you write. You want people to learn about what you say. You want people to know things. You want to, writing is one of the greatest gifts from God, I think. One of the greatest gifts on this earth. I mean, you're not going to make a lot of money with it, of course, unless you really, really savvy, you can. Oh, yeah, you can make money from being an author. People have done it, and people are doing it. But for those of us out here who are struggling, it's tough. It's tough, but that's not to say that you should not keep that. That's not to say that you should give up on writing. You should never give it up. I mean, if you can do it, if there's time in your day for you to do it, do it. You know, do it, do it. It's great. I mean, just by, I've had people say, George, why do you write about Dracula? That's stupid. No, it's not. I mean, I write about a variety of things. I've written about Jesus Christ. I've written about, I write on a varying subject. I write about different things, different topics, different subjects, different stories. I try to be different. And I had written so much detective, cops and robbers kinds of books. I wanted to take a chance on writing romance. Yeah, I do romance. You'll find it. I do romance. I do horror. It's all fun, no matter what you. And also, I've done nonfiction. So there's nonfiction. So I do a lot of different kinds of writing. And I wanted to try my hand at writing horror because I remember as a child, I used to always pretend like I was Dracula, Frankenstein, the mummy, you know, stuff like that. And I've done it. Also, I used to pretend when I was an adult. So, and I saw that a lot of people were buying stuff like that. A lot of people were interested in horror. So I decided to give them two or three stories of it. And, you know, see where it goes from there. I mean, I take my horror, my interest in horror from Edgar Allan Poe. He was the same way. I mean, he wrote love stories. He wrote nonfiction. He wrote horror. So I think that's, if you're a writer, you're going to try to write in every genre there is, because there's a reading base out there for whatever you write. If you write romance, people are going to come and devour it. If you write horror stories, the horror story readers are going to devour what you write. If you write essays, you know, whatever, nonfiction, you're trying to reach a broad and fickle audience. You got to give them what they want. You got to give them what they want. You don't give them what they want, they're going to go to some other reader. They're going to go to some other author. Sorry, some other author. So you have to give them what they want. You know, well, George writes this and George writes that and he does this and he does that. Okay, let's go see what George is doing. Now, let me read a sample. You know, so, you know, getting back, we all have a story inside of us. We all have a story inside of us. We sure do. And it would be great if all of us could just write about ourselves, write about our upbringing. What was it like when we were a child? What was it like being a teenager? What was it like going to college, being a young adult? What was your first marriage or your first girlfriend or boyfriend? What was that like? Everybody has a story. Everybody has a story. And people should, you know, I think people should write about it. I think people should write about themselves. You know, it's right there. You don't have to be anybody famous. You know, writing about yourself may make you famous. who knows? Somebody may decide to do a movie or something. Hey, wow, this story is compelling. You know, so that's what that is about. All right, let's move on. Let's move on. We're going to be doing something on diabetes today, folks. And because it's one of the diseases that, people don't talk about much, and people say, well, it's not as deadly as cancer. It can be. It can be if it's not treated properly and fairly. So we're going to do this on, okay, diabetes, in case you don't know, because that's one of the things that I'm an advocate on, besides domestic violence. That's one of the things I'm an advocate on. And so many people out here have diabetes, and so many people have it, and so many people don't know what to do. So many people are overwhelmed by it. If you get overwhelmed with diabetes, you're gonna die. It's gonna kill you, because you won't be able to, you don't know how to take care of it. Don't get overwhelmed. Just go get treated, and talk to your doctor, talk to your friends, get encouragement, talk to your family members, because, and take it very seriously. Do not go by what other people might say. Oh, it's not that bad. Diabetes ain't not, it is. It's a big deal. People die every day from diabetes. It's a big damn deal. Okay, here is something. Here's a couple of doctors that would probably tell you, give you a little bit more insight on into the disease, and hopefully we can live a lot longer with it or eradicate it.
What happens is that the diabetes, they tell you, is a chronic disease. And so this is what happens, and this is what happens in all studies. And if you've taken medications, you know this is what happens. So your sugars start out actually not bad. As you take the medications, the sugars actually comes down a bit. But over the years, it kind of, the effect sort of wears off. So then you wind up having to add more and more and more medications. So what happens is that no matter what drug you take, so these compare three drugs, metformin, glibride, and rosiglitazone. So no matter what drug you take, the initial effect is very good, up to about 6 months. And then after about 6 months, the effect kind of wears off, and you can see that the sugar slowly goes up. And so what happens is that you wind up on a second medication or a third medication. And this is pretty well what happens to everybody. So if you've had diabetes for a while, and many people have had it for 10, you know, 12, 15 years, what you find is that you start off on metformin, then you go to metformin and glibride, then maybe three agents or four agents, then you wind up on a little bit of insulin, then you wind up on more insulin and more insulin. And if you think about the diabetes, if you think about who has, you know, mild diabetes and who has severe diabetes, you can see that the people who are just on the little bit of metformin are, you know, have mild diabetes, and if you're on a lot of insulin, you have very severe diabetes. So in fact, over these years, despite what everybody tells you, your diabetes is just getting worse and worse and worse. So your sugars might go up, they might go down, but your diabetes is actually getting worse. And I think that's what confuses people a lot, because they think that the sugar and the diabetes are the same thing, but they're actually not. But over that period of time, you can see that no matter what, it's actually progressing, and they say it's a progressive disease. So this is the thing that you have to understand, that the sugars and the diabetes are actually two different things. So diabetes, the real heart of diabetes is the insulin resistance, okay? So that part is what's getting worse. The sugars is really just a symptom of the insulin resistance, okay? But it's not the actual diabetes. The actual diabetes is the resistance to insulin and the subsequent very high levels of insulin. If you want to think about it, you know, in an analogy, you can think about an infection. So if you have an infection, so you have a big, you know, infection in the lungs or whatever, that's the actual disease. The symptom is the fever, okay? So what you have to do is treat the disease, which is the infection, with antibiotics. You can't treat the symptom of the fever. So if you have a very bad infection, you need antibiotics. You don't need more and more Tylenol. So diabetes is the same thing. The disease is about insulin resistance, but the symptom is the high blood sugar. And yet all our treatment is directed against the high blood sugar. So you can see that controlling the high blood sugars actually doesn't do anything for you, because you're not actually treating the disease. The disease actually continues to progress. And that's the real problem. So up to about 5 years ago, we thought that treating the sugars would make you better, right? And this is what probably all of you have heard. Your sugars are doing fine, your sugars are doing fine. So if you think that the sugars is the same thing as the diabetes, then you think that the diabetes is doing fine. But it turns out about 5 years ago that they did three very large studies. And what they found was that no matter if your sugars were well controlled or poorly controlled, it actually didn't make any difference. You still got complications of diabetes, you still got the disease, you know, the heart disease, the strokes, you got the, you know, the eye disease, the kidney disease, all of it. So none of that was made better by controlling the sugars. And if you think about it this way, you can see why. Because you're not actually treating the disease. You're only treating the symptoms. So just like if you take Tylenol for an infection, it might make you look better, but it doesn't actually make you better. So this is the same thing. So the diabetes is the insulin resistance. So you have to understand what is the cause of the insulin resistance, and then you actually have to treat it. So you have to treat the insulin resistance and not the sugars. Now, at a certain point when your sugars are very high, yes, you have to treat it. But that's not what is really important in the disease. The real part of the heart of the disease is the insulin resistance. And because they don't really understand what causes the insulin resistance, they can't actually treat it. So all your treatments, all the metformin, all the glyburide, all the insulin, all of that is aimed at simply treating the sugars. So here's the real question. What causes the insulin resistance? And this is what's happening in the body. This is just a cartoon. So normally the insulin causes you to lower the blood sugars. That's what it does. As you eat, you know, your blood sugars go up and insulin is released to take that sugar out of the blood and into the tissues. And that's a normal thing. When you develop insulin resistance, the insulin doesn't seem to work as well. So what happens is that the body kind of pumps up the levels of insulin to make it work well enough to get your sugars out of the way. But the high insulin level is a result of the insulin resistance. But what causes the insulin resistance in the first place? And that's really what you need to understand in order to treat it. Because if you know what causes the insulin resistance, then you can treat it. And it turns out that it's actually the insulin that causes the insulin resistance. And that might seem funny at first, but in fact, that's what happens in most biological systems. So if you look at any other hormone, if you get exposed to it, your body develops resistance to it. So if you look at addictive drugs or alcohol or anything, or smoking or anything, as you take the first one, say for instance marijuana or cocaine or one of these addictive drugs, or you can take Valium or any of these antipsychotics and stuff, as you take the first one, you get a real high. But every subsequent one is a little bit lower. So you wind up having to take higher and higher doses to get the same effect. And that's really resistance or tolerance. And it happens for all drugs. Insulin is exactly the same. As you take more and more insulin, your body develops more and more resistance to it. And now you see that it's actually a real vicious cycle. Because what happens is that if your insulin level is high, then you get some insulin resistance. As you get insulin resistance, you get higher insulin levels. As you get higher insulin levels, you get higher resistance, and it goes round and round. So you have a vicious circle. And in fact, treatment with insulin now is not simply not effective. It's actually making things worse because you're feeding into that cycle. So while the insulin lowers your sugars, it is actually raising your insulin resistance. So in fact, it's making things worse. You're getting more diabetes by taking the insulin. And that's the real problem. When you understand the actual disease, you can see why current standard treatment is actually not only not effective, it's actually really, really, really bad for you. Because you're treating the exact, what is actually causing the disease is what you're treating it with. That's never going to work, right? It's just not going to work. So if you think about it, the problem is that the insulin level is too high. So you're not going to make things better by taking more insulin. It's like treating an alcoholic with alcohol. right? This is exactly the same thing. So the same thing happens in alcohol. If you take alcohol, the first one you get, you know, a real buzz, and then every subsequent one is a little lower. And what happens is that if you take the alcohol, your symptoms, you feel a little bit better. But you're not making the alcoholism any better, right? This is the exact same thing. The problem is that your insulin levels are too high. So how can taking more insulin possibly be good for you? And the truth is that it wasn't. It was never good for you. In fact, it made things worse. But people didn't really understand that. And because they didn't understand that, they then made an excuse for themselves by saying that this is a chronic progressive disease. But the truth is that diabetes was not a chronic progressive disease, because we know that we can cure it in many cases. So if you do weight loss surgery or gastric banding or bariatric surgery, basically if you staple somebody's stomach, their diabetes goes away in like 90% of cases. So this was not a chronic progressive disease, this is a curable disease. So if you say that this is a curable disease, yet our treatment is making people worse, the only logical conclusion is that our treatment is completely incorrect. And that's exactly what it is. So when you're thinking about treatment of diabetes, there's a few things you have to consider. One, you have to understand that the key to treating diabetes is not to take more insulin. That makes things worse. The key is, how are you going to get those insulin levels really low? The second thing is that diabetes is a dietary disease, okay? Almost for sure it's a dietary disease. We know that. Yet, if it's a dietary disease, the cure is going to have to be dietary. You can't take a dietary disease and treat it with drugs and pretend that that's going to make things better. But yet, that's what we've done. We've taken a disease which is dietary in nature, and we've prescribed you drugs that suppress the symptoms. It's not going to make it better, and it hasn't. The last 30 years has borne it out. The third thing is that this is not a chronic progressive disease at all. This is, in fact, a curable disease, but you have to treat it the right way. You have to understand what you're doing. So one of the things we do in our clinic is that we are looking at ways of how to lower the insulin levels. And that's the real thing. And one of the simpler ways to do it is intermittent fasting. And that's why we have a lot of people on these sort of protocols. And one of the things to remember is that fasting has been done for many, many years. You know, everybody thinks that it's so crazy. Everybody hears about it at first and thinks it's crazy. But you have to remember that fasting has been done for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And not only that, but almost every single major religion in the world has periods of fasting that are prescribed. Not because, you know, of any particular reason, but they recognize that it is actually a very healthy thing for people to be doing every so often. And why is it so healthy? Because what happens is that when you fast, your insulin levels go down very low. Because you're not eating, your insulin levels go down. And having periods where your insulin level is down helps prevent that vicious cycle, right? It's the insulin that leads to the resistance, which leads to higher insulin. It's a vicious cycle. So if every once in a while, you know, you do Ramadan, which is a month of fasting, or you do, you know, the 40 days of Lent, or whatever it is you do, if you have a period now where your insulin level is very low, you're going to completely break that vicious cycle. And if you do that routinely through the year, then you will stay healthy. You will prevent the development of that resistance. If you don't get the resistance, you don't get the high levels. And that's what we do. So I'm going to show you here what we do kind of in a demonstration. So what we do in terms of the sugars, you can think about it this way. The body actually has the ability to store energy in two ways. So when you eat, you're taking in energy as food, right? So you can store that in two ways. You can store sugar and you can store fat. Okay, so sugar is stored in the liver as something called glycogen. And there's a really a limited amount of glycogen that you can store in the liver, but it's readily available. Okay, so it's kind of like a short-term storage, but you can store sugar. If you store more energy than fat, the body will actually turn that into fat, and that's kind of long-term food energy storage, right? So as long as you're eating, you're going to be burning that off. You're going to be increasing insulin, and insulin is going to tell your body to store some of that away, okay? So if you have too much sugar, what happens is that some of that is going to go into the stores. But as long as your stores are not full, it's not going to spill over into the blood. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to demonstrate it this way. Normally, as you take a little thing to eat, if you don't have filled up stores of sugar, what's going to happen is that you're going to fill it up a little bit, right? But it's fine. As you don't eat, so for instance, you eat dinner, you take in more calories than you can really use for that period of time. So your body produces insulin, and insulin says to the body, okay, well, I've eaten a big meal. I'll use a little bit of that as energy. The rest I'm going to put in storage as sugar, okay, because that's what I do. So it fills up the storage, but the storage is empty, so it's fine. Then you go to sleep, so for the next, you know, 9, 12 hours, you're not eating. So what happens is that your body is going to take that and it's going to burn it off as energy. So that's fine. That's the normal situation. Now what happens in the diabetic situation is something like this. So over time, your storage is, you know, empty. But over time, as you kind of continue to eat more and more, what happens is that that storage kind of gets filled up. And now here's the situation in diabetes. This is your storage levels of sugar, right? They're completely full, right? And what you do when you eat is this. You're going to take in a meal and you're going to have more sugar. And what's going to happen? It's all going to spill over into the blood, right? So the blood sugar levels go up. There's nothing it can do. It can't store any more. So for a while, your body can compensate. But what does insulin do? So now you're diabetic, and this is what happens every mealtime. Your storage is filled up. Every time you eat, the sugar spills out into the blood. Well, as you take insulin to take care of that problem, the body is going to take that excess sugar and force it back into the body. So what happens to that? Your body is just going to store it as fat. In other words, the insulin is going to make you gain weight. And if you've ever taken insulin, you know already that's exactly what happens. But this is the problem. If you continue to do this day after day, year after year, all you do is gain weight, right? But it doesn't make you any better because all that sugar is still in your body. So it's kind of like that show Hoarders. I don't know if you've seen it, but people, you know, hoard too much stuff and their house is full of stuff. So pretty soon the stuff flows out. And what happens? If you're taking insulin, all you're doing is taking all that garbage and shoving it back into the house. Well, that's not going to help. That's not going to make things better. In fact, over time, it's just going to make things worse. And that's exactly what happens in the current treatment of diabetes. So this is what we do instead. If your cup is completely full, the only rational treatment for diabetes, so this is the situation now in diabetes, your cup is completely full. The only way that's going to make you better is to start draining it off. So that's what you do. So as you fast, what happens? A little bit of this water is going to come out and it's going to get burned off. The next time you fast, a little bit more of this water is going to come and it's going to get drained off. Every single time you do it. So when you eat, it will fill back up a little bit, right? But as you go, what's going to happen is eventually your stores are going to come down and it won't spill over into the blood. You're basically just forcing the body to burn off that sugar. But as you do, you reduce the stores of sugar and you get better. Your diabetes gets better because now you're burning it off. It's like that guy in Hoarders. Instead of shoving it back into your house, which is what the insulin does, we're just going to throw it out. And really, that's really the reason that we do this. You have to lower insulin levels, but you got to get rid of that sugar. Okay? You've stored up too much. And it hasn't been stored up over like a month. It's been stored up over like 10 years, right? So the thing is that it's not going to reverse in a
a week or a month or 2 months even.
Yes, if you do fasting every day, it will reverse faster, right? Because you're getting rid of that sugar every day. So this is what we do. And a few patients actually have been kind enough to share their stories with us. But I'll present a few other cases because we've had, you know, quite a number of people go through the program. So I'll just share their stories with you quickly, because really it illustrates really how powerful this new concept is. So the first case we have is Richard, who's here today. And so he's had diabetes for about 10 years now, and he's had a few complications, including some kidney disease, which is why he was here in this office. And he saw a colleague of mine, Dr. Ting, and so he was referred into the Intensive Dietary Management Program, and we started him in June of 2013. And we started him with a fasting regimen as opposed to the amount of insulin that he had. So this is Richard and his wife. Oh, I can't see that very well. And this is what's happened to his weight. So his weight, starting just above 250, has been steadily coming down. And it's down to 210. His waist size has continued to come down. And his hemoglobin A1C, which is the measure of his sugars, has stayed relatively stable, below 7%. And this is him now. So if you look at what has happened to his insulin dose, so he started off with 55 units of insulin. And within, 6 weeks, he was off of all his insulin. In other words, his sugars are doing fine, and he's off of all his medications completely. And his levels of A1C are no longer at a level where you could make the case that he is diabetic. In other words, you could say that his diabetes has been cured. By using these kind of simple understanding of diabetes, you can see that this is actually the rational but also the natural way to cure diabetes. We're not talking about piling on more drugs for you. I mean, you go to some of these places, they'll tell you to take these experimental drugs and they want to sign you up for drug trials. No. What we're doing has been done for thousands of years and is in fact exactly the way they used to treat diabetes. But they understood that it was a dietary disease. It has to be treated with dietary measures. This is the second case, Balraj, who's here this morning as well. So he was diagnosed in 2003 with diabetes, and he also had some complications of that. And so, after treating him incorrectly for many years, I started him on the Intensive Dietary Management Program because, back then I didn't understand much of this myself. Much of this is new. So he started in August. And so his weight has come down a bit, but, he started at 186 and he's come down, 8-10 pounds or so. His waist has come down, but you can see his sugars, his hemoglobin A1C has stayed very good. And this is his medications. So again, starting at over 40 units, about 40 units a day of insulin. So this is what he had to take. Within 5-7 weeks, he was down to zero. He is no longer taking insulin. He's no longer taking any medications for his diabetes. Which again, you could say, if your sugars are good and you're no longer on any medications, you could say that your diabetes has been cured. In essence, what we're doing is exactly the same thing we do with the stomach stapling surgery. So the stomach stapling surgery, the cure rates for diabetes are like 90%. But the benefits are because of the fasting. They cut your stomach so you can't eat. In other words, you're fasting. But if all the benefits come from fasting, why do the surgery at all? It doesn't even make sense. Just do the fasting. This is another case. He's not here, but he's a 45-year-old Filipino man, and he was just recently diagnosed with diabetes. He started with a hemoglobin A1C of 8.7%. So anything over 6.5% is considered diabetes. Anything over 7% is diabetes, but he was newly diagnosed and he really didn't want to start any medications. So I said to him, well, if you don't want to start medications, then come into my program and we'll treat you. And we'll treat you and therefore you won't have to take medications. So it had been slowly rising over the last 6 months, and what happened was that he started in June. His weight, again, came down. It came down about 3 kilos, but his A1C continuously came down. So you can see that his final A1C at the end of
10, 12 weeks was 6.3%. So again, at a level that you wouldn't be able to say that he has diabetes. So in other words, this fellow, instead of taking medication and then later taking more medication, then more medication, then more medication, we're able to treat him right off the bat with a dietary regimen, and he's been able not to take any medications. In essence, his diabetes has been cured. So again, lots of cases. Another fellow, 66-year-old Chinese man, much the same story. Type 2 diabetes, which was recently diagnosed in 2012, and you can see that his sugars were really high. His A1C was 10.5%. I told him to try different things, but I just saw him actually in September of 2013, and his A1C was still 9.4%. And he didn't have a drug plan, so he really didn't want to take any medication. So I said, well, if you don't want to take medications, come into the program, and that should say September 2013. So we started him a few months ago, and this is what's happened. So as he's following the program, his sugars are coming down, exactly what we would expect. And as you follow the program longer, you're burning off those stores of sugar, and your hemoglobin A1C is coming down. So he went from 9.4 to 8.4, and I just saw him at 7.3. So again, all without medications, and I'm hoping that he will never have to take medications. Another case, Desmond, he had some heart problems. He also had diabetes, and he's here this morning as well to share his story. He also had a bit of complications, the heart disease, the neuropathy, and this is what we did. Again, he with diabetes, it causes all kinds of problems, right? So you get heart problems, you get kidney problems, you get eye problems, all kinds of problems. And the thing about it is that there's nothing we can do about those kidney problems or those eye problems, because it's the diabetes which is killing the kidneys, the heart, and all that sort of thing. If you don't do anything about the diabetes, you can't do anything about the kidneys or the eyes or anything else, because the root of the problem is the diabetes. So you have to take care of the diabetes. And the way that we had been treating him was making the diabetes worse and worse. So we started him on the program, and again, his weight has been slowly coming down, as you might expect. His waist size has come down, and his sugars actually have stayed very, very good. But if you look at his doses of insulin now, again, starting at about 25 units a day, we're able to bring him down, and now he's no longer on any insulin. We switched him instead to one of the pills, which is, you know, for many reasons, is much better. It's safer, it's much less, you know, you don't have to poke yourself all the time, you don't have to check your sugars all the time. But really, he's been able to come down of all those medications. If your medications are coming down, you're coming off of the insulin, you're going on to pills instead, it means your diabetes is getting better, right? Before, every single year, your diabetes was getting worse. And now, for the first time, we see everybody's diabetes getting better. It's reversing, because instead of having higher insulin levels leading to higher resistance, now we have lower insulin levels leading to less resistance. So you're actually driving that cycle now in reverse, and that's why it's working so well. And that's just a recent picture of him now. A couple more cases. So Frank, who couldn't be here, we asked him to be here, and he said that he's, I think he was away, so he couldn't come, but he did want to come. He also had diabetes and kidney disease, and he actually didn't really want to start. He calls himself a grumpy old goat because he didn't really want to start. He didn't think it was great, but I kind of talked him into it. I said, you know, you really should try it, because there's nothing to lose by trying it. If you don't like it, then you don't do it. But we were able to start him on the program, and you can see here again, his weight is coming down nicely, his waist size is coming down, his sugars are improving almost every single time, and if you look at his doses of medication again, he started on 45 units a day of insulin. By the time we finished with him, he's on no insulin, and he's just taking a pill. So again, you can see that his diabetes is getting better. His sugars might go up and down. The sugars actually get better as you treat the disease. Just like if you treat with antibiotics, your fever goes away because your disease is getting better. You don't have to treat with Tylenol, because if you get rid of the infection, the disease, the symptoms go away. It's the same with the diabetes. As you treat the diabetes, the high sugars goes away, because the high sugars was just a symptom. You can't treat the symptoms and expect the disease to get better. But as you treat the disease, the symptoms get better. So everyone here, their sugars are coming down. We're not treating the sugars particularly. We're treating the disease. Another fellow who is here, I follow for high blood pressure, and I've seen him for quite some time, actually. And he was also diagnosed with type 2 diabetes as far back at least as 2004. He'd been on insulin since 2007. And his main problem was actually high blood pressure. But I said, well, you know, high blood pressure goes along with the whole metabolic syndrome. So, in fact, the diabetes and the weight and the hypertension and the high cholesterol, they're actually all caused by the high insulin level. So I said, well, with this high blood pressure, we need to do something. So I said, well, we need to get you into the program because he was on probably 8 different medications for high blood pressure. And his pressure was still like 200, right? So we put him in the program, and what happened to him, his insulin levels, his insulin dose went from 70 units a day to right now 0. He's just on some pills. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. His blood pressure is getting better. His blood sugars, again, they go up and down. We can see that they're all within the normal range. But we went from 70 units of insulin a day to 0 in less than 3 months. So 5 years of insulin that he's been taking every single day. Not getting better, getting worse. Over time, it just gets worse. But now it's starting to reverse finally. And another fellow who isn't able to come, but we call Mr. Yes, much the same story. He had been on insulin for many, many years. And as everybody here, he started with a medication, then he took more medications, then he took insulin, then he took more insulin. By the time they were done with him, he was on 140 units of insulin a day. And that's not even that unusual. I see lots of people with that kind of high dose. So as we got him into the program, his waist size was coming down, his weight is coming down, his sugars are getting better, and he's not completely off insulin, but he's down to about 30, 40 units a day. So from 140 down to about 30 or 40. So significant improvement. I mean, because he started so high, it's going to take a little bit longer. But again, you can see that as you continue to do it, it gets better. And this is Robert. He's also here this morning, but he's done extremely well again. So the same story, type 2 diabetes treated with medications and more medications and more medications. Finally, they put him on insulin, and then I recently saw him and I said, whoa, insulin, now this is not good news, right? So I said, forget that. We need to get you into the program. We need to get you treated correctly, because if you're not treated correctly, I've seen this movie before, it goes insulin, more insulin, more insulin, more insulin. In fact, his insulin dose went very quickly up to close to 40 units a day. So as we got him started, his weight started to come down, his waist size came down, his sugars got better, and look, within 3 weeks, he was off of all his insulin and just taking medications. Now we're working on getting rid of the rest of his medications. So that is the power of being able to treat it correctly. And these are not isolated cases. We actually see responses in, you know, the majority of patients because we're doing the things the right way. If you do it the wrong way, you'll never get any benefit from it. And that's what we've been doing all along. So the key here really is to lower insulin levels. And there's more than one way to do it. We use intermittent fasting because it's a very simple way to do it. But there's actually a number of ways to reduce insulin because that's really the key. The insulin is what causes the diabetes. What's interesting also is that the insulin causes obesity. And that's why they go together, because they have the same cause. They're both caused by the same thing. So whether you're here for weight loss or whether you're here for diabetes, they're both caused by the same thing. They're diseases of too much insulin. And if you understand that they're diseases of too much insulin, now you can say, that's good to know, because now I need to know how we're going to reduce the insulin levels. That's the key. So intermittent fasting is one way. The second way is to reduce your dietary refined carbohydrates. So carbohydrates tend to raise the insulin levels very high, and therefore they're something that you should reduce. There are also several protective factors. So there are factors that protect against the rising insulin. And one of those is a high-fat diet, which is very interesting because for many years, you've probably heard that you should eat a low-fat diet. And what I'm saying is actually that wasn't good for you at all, because the fat actually helps protect you by keeping those insulin levels down. Fiber does much the same thing, so high fiber diets also help protect against the rise in insulin. Vinegar.
All right, hope you enjoyed that. Bring it up. All right. Welcome to the Joy. Welcome back. We've been away for a while, but that's all right. I hope you like my segment on diabetes, because a lot of people out here are suffering from that disease and don't even know they have it. And we're trying to enlighten some people and making the world a better place. All righty. What do we have here? Southern Illinois college student shot dead in St. Louis. Okay. That's not good. That is not good. I believe the Cubs and the White Sox both won their respective games today. Good, because they both lost their opener for the baseball season. They lost, but they've won so far. And I'm curious to see what the Chicago Bears is going to do upcoming. Their upcoming season this year. I'm curious. Jay Cutler is not with them anymore. There's been a lot of changes. The season was 3-13. They won three games. They lost 13. And the management for the Chicago Bears, the ownership, they raised the ticket prices after a dismal season. So, and the last couple of games the Bears played last year, there were hardly anybody in the stands. They lost miserably. So that was no
nothing to write home about. And I'm wondering to see if the fans are going to fill the stands this season. I'm wondering, especially after they've raised ticket prices. I mean, you what they should have done, in my estimation, in my thinking, lowered the prices. I mean, why would you raise prices on a dismal team that hasn't won jack, who actually has embarrassed the city with their play? Offense and defensive plays. They have embarrassed, and you're going to raise ticket prices? Buy those tickets to hardworking people of the United States, because there's a lot of Bear fans all over the world. But still in all, the Bears had a dismal, awful season. They lost. They kept losing. They were embarrassing. They were embarrassing the city. They were embarrassing the state, you know, with goofy plays and dumb plays offensively and defensively. It just sucked all over the place for the Bears of 2016. And now for 2017, the ownership, they're raising ticket prices at the gate. As if the Bears won the Super Bowl or something, which they will never win. That's awful. That's totally, totally awful. And I will talk more about this on Monday. We're going to have 3 days off. I'm hopefully I'll be okay when we start back up on Monday, which is the 10th, and so on. We've got a lot of great guests lined up, and, you know, that should be interesting. That should be very, very interesting. A lot of great guests lined up for that week. We're going to be on, like I said before, if you've been following the show, you know that we're on Monday through Thursday. Yep, unless something happens, like if I should get sick or something, or yeah, whatever, or I just have one of those senior moments or whatever. But we are here, and we try to be here 4 days a week. I've been doing this for 3 or 4 years now. So, you know, and I'm pretty sure the people who do follow the show, who are interested in the show, they understand that, because I've said many times, if I'm not on the air, if you can't get me or whatever, you can always listen to a podcast of this show. There's so many of them out here on this website, blogtalkradio.com/George Wilder Jr. It's all there. I mean, you know, and the shows sound just as fresh if you were listening to them live, you know, like you're listening to this one live. And, you know, it happens. We are on 4 days a week, starting at 6 o'clock to 7:30, sometimes 8. And I'm going to take it to 2 hours, because I feel that the show has really garnered a listenership. And we're going to do it a little longer because I love doing it. I mean, what else can I do? I can't do anything. I don't hardly know. Well, I can do other things, but I don't want to do other things. I'm going to do this show. And I know there's a lot of competition out there. Well, you know, if I want to talk about competition, I talk about competition because it's not a bad thing. I mean, you know, because a lot of these talk show hosts out here, internet show hosts, each and every one of these individual shows, they're talking about something that's different. One radio show may be talking about how to how to fix your car, you know, stuff like that. So then you got several sports shows, and you got a few news shows, a few political shows out there on the internet, and, you know, people talk how to make a quilt or something. I think there's room for everybody. I think there's a room for me and everybody else out there, because this is a great big world, and we probably don't even have enough hosts out there to do this thing. Anyway, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks, everybody. We're going to be off for 3 days. We'll be back Monday through Thursday next week. As always, you guys take care, and stay safe out there. All right. I'll see you on Monday. Bye-bye.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven
bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl. Heaven help us all.
Gonna be a flood of guests with their interesting stories, so that should be fun. And I want to get once again thanks for listening, thank you for tuning in. It's always appreciative, and I hope you join me next week. Bye bye.